Are you looking to optimize your performance, grow your mind, and change your system? Well, you've come to the right place. I'm Brad Baker.
And I'm Tom Brobeck.
And this is the Bold-Based Performance Podcast.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is Andrew McGecky, host of the Coach Growth Podcast. Andrew coaches football, track, and strength conditioning at Macomb High School in Illinois. We chat about the ups and downs of podcasting, COVID, and finding a path to coaching. Andrew shares some raw stories that I think a lot of coaches can relate to and take value from. Make sure you check out boldbasedperformance.com today to grow your mind, optimize your performance, and change your system.
Well, first, before I started the podcast, I was a huge podcast listener. I love podcasts. I'm a huge walker. I love to go on long walks. It's just very relaxing for me, kind of therapeutic. And so, like a lot of people, I just throw on a podcast. You know, I've got thousands of songs on my phone, but eventually music just kind of gets old and you want to listen to something new. So you throw on a podcast, and there's so many great podcasts out there. So I was a huge listener prior to starting my own. And I listened to an episode. Joe Frontier, who's a former guest of mine, has a podcast called the Throw Big Throw Far podcast. And it's about throwing, which is a huge passion of mine in track and field. And he had a guest on called Mike Cunningham, who works for Gale Athletics, who was actually my first guest. And I heard Mike's story. And it just, honestly, it just kind of, I don't want to say it changed my life, but it gave me a huge sense of hope for how he started out as a young coach and how his journey unfolded. And there's a lot of similarities to my own story of where I was at that time. And I just remember listening to it on a walk and just getting a sense of hope of that, you know, where my situation was, it's going to get better and things like that. And I thought that was completely unintentional. I had no idea that I was going to hear something so thought provoking and positive that day just from putting on a podcast. And it made me think about the impact that everyone's stories have and how your own story can impact someone without you even realizing it. And so I thought, you know, here at the time I was 25 years old. And I thought, you know, I'm only 25, but as a coach, I've been through a lot. You know, I started coaching when I was 18. I've been a head coach. I became a head coach when I was 20. And so I already have a lot of experience that a lot of younger coaches don't have, just because typically a lot of coaches, you know, you go to college, you intern, you get a teaching job, and then you become a coach. So I kind of have a 4 or 5 year jump on a lot of people my age when it comes to coaching. So I thought, I get a lot of value from listening to other people. Perhaps if I put out some of my own experience and stories, other people can get value from it. And I don't mean that in a like, oh, I'm an amazing coach and people are going to learn so much from me. But I just thought perhaps something I say will impact someone the way like what Mike's story impacted me. So that was a huge part of it. And then the other part, the more selfish reason why I started it was because I'm a huge networking person. I love talking to people. I love DMing people on Twitter, other coaches, and just learning from them and picking their brain. And I thought, you know, who doesn't like to talk about themselves? And so I hoped I could use a podcast as a way to reach out to coaches that maybe I wouldn't have prior to that, because I'm a relatively unknown person in the coaching field. You know, I'm young in a small school. So I thought, you know, podcast seems like a good way to initiate those conversations and those relationships. And it has, you know, you've had Tony Holler on. Tony Holler was one of my first guests, and I had almost 3 hours of just uninterrupted time with Tony Holler, free of charge. And I just got to listen to him tell his story, and I just got to take so much out of it, you know. And even after we stopped recording, we kept talking, and, you know, I just got to kind of pick his brain on a one-on-one session. And then I got to put that out for other people to listen to. And so there's the unselfish side where I thought, you know, maybe my, you know, I could put out advice to help other people, to help other young coaches that want to be the best coach they can be. And that's, you know, why I titled it the Coach Growth Podcast, because I want to, you know, I'm young and I know that I don't know everything. I didn't know that when I first started coaching. Like a lot of people, I kind of had the opposite mentality, but I knew I needed to learn and grow. So a podcast was a great chance for me to do that. You know, and then there's the selfish side where it's a great tool to connect with other people. Hey, you know, if you know, sticking with Tony, for example, I would hate to see what his Twitter DMs look like. I'm sure he's just bombarded all the time by coaches. And so I reached out to him, but I was like, hey, of course I want to talk about Feed the Cats, but I also want to talk about you before Feed the Cats. And I think he was kind of excited about that because that's a part of his story that he doesn't share a whole lot. You know, a lot of people don't know about what he was, you know, what his coaching career was like when he first went and started in Harrisburg and then Tennessee. They just know him from his time in Plainfield North. And I think there's a lot of value to hear from Tony's story and other coaches, obviously. But yeah, the podcast was a chance for me to kind of dive into those topics.
You mentioned the phrase change your life. And I think when people I use that a lot. And it's not that you are going one direction and something happens and you completely go the other direction. But it can be simple as, you know, if to use an analogy, like you're going north and then someone gives you new information, gives you new idea, helps you with the philosophy. And now you're going like a little bit northwest. And that is a change. It is changing your life and the direction and the path and your ultimate goals. But it's not like a complete reversal. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I haven't had like an aha moment listening to a podcast specifically, even that I was like, oh, this, I need to go the opposite, like you said, the opposite direction. It's more of just reaffirming that what I'm doing right now is what I'm meant to do. It's what I love doing. And hearing other coaches talk about their passion and their story, there's just little things that reaffirm that. For example, I graduated high school in 2013. The reason I'm in Macomb is because I enrolled at Western Illinois University. I was a PE major, and through a lot of poor decision making, I had to leave school. And I have made a couple attempts to go back, but right now I don't have a degree. And you know, here I am now 26, and I'm thinking, okay, do I need to hang up this charade? Like, is this the right thing to do, right? And then I was listening to a podcast, and Chad Gunnelson was on it, who's the head track coach at the University of Dubuque. And he was talking about how he wasn't teaching, you know, he didn't have his degree, and he was running a business and all these things. And he got a call from an old coach of his who was at the University of Dubuque, and they're like, we're going to hire you to be our track coach. And he's like, I don't even have a degree yet. And I remember hearing that, and it just made me realize that if it's meant to happen, it'll happen, right? And I told Chad this when I had him on my show. I was like, you know, it was an amazing thing here, but it was also a bad thing, because after that, I'm like, oh, I don't need to go back to school. I'm going to get some college is going to hire me. So I was like, it happened to him, so it'll happen to me. And, you know, obviously, like that story is very rare, and it's an incredible story. But it just, like I said, it just affirmed that my journey's unique, but that doesn't mean it's the wrong journey, right? It's, you know, my path is my path. And so while it's a different path than most people take to get to the destination of the place in life where I'm at right now is just a high school track coach, doesn't mean that I need to change it, right? You know, it's just, it's different. And so if this guy that I know and look up to, his story was somewhat similar and it worked out for him, well, then I know that there's a chance it'll work out for me, right? And so it just, like, for example, you know, I listened to a podcast episode and it made me not abandon ship. So while I do think sometimes podcasts have some, I don't want to say they become oversaturated, but they're definitely a lot more commonplace than they were a couple of years ago, of course, but which I think is almost a good thing, right? Like my podcast might be a dime a dozen when it comes to coaching stuff, but it only takes one episode, you know, for some guest or host to say the right thing. And you might not know when it's going to happen, but it could change your life, honestly, like you said.
Absolutely. And the phrase you use, it's a unique path. It's not the wrong path. I think a lot of people, coaches, just even this generation, the first career path you think in your head, whether that's in middle school, high school, college, early adulthood, you think that is the only answer to success. And then when your life takes a different path, it's hard to adjust sometimes because you've had this ingrained in your head, maybe for 10 plus years, this is what I need to do
to be happy and successful. And when it goes a different way, it doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. It depends on, are you happy? Are you fulfilled? Are you providing value? But it just might be something you're not expecting. And if you can, especially early on in your career, if you can find ways to adapt to that and still push yourself, still be the best person you can be, I think you can sense a lot more value in what you are doing. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And perhaps those moments you realize that it is the, you do need to take a different path, right? But you just need to have the awareness to discern those moments for yourself. You know? And I'm a big person on self-reflection. That's, you know, something at the beginning of COVID, when I knew I had all this time, more time, I should say, to myself and to thank. And that's when I started the podcast, was because I knew it was a good opportunity to time-wise. That was, you know, one of the things that is this something that I want to commit to, right? Is this career path, you know, the right thing? And through a lot of time and self-reflection, I knew that it was. And you know, I stick by that decision, and you know, I absolutely love what I do. And I couldn't picture myself doing anything besides this, you know? So, you know, but it's not to say that it can't be different, but you just need to have the awareness to discern that for yourself, if that makes sense.
What has been the most challenging part of starting the podcast and growing it and maintaining it and giving it your best effort?
For me, it's been time. You know, before we got on, I have a pretty busy schedule. Not that other people don't have busy schedules, and just trying to align busy schedules, I guess, is really difficult. I don't teach, and most of my guests being coaches, like all my guests being coaches, they are in their days are kind of blocked out from 7 a.m. to 3:30, 4 o'clock, and then practice. And so that's the time of the day that I'm the most available. And then at night, when in the evenings, when they're home, they're like, yeah, I can, you know, talk before dinner or something like that. That's when I work. I work at nights. I work in a restaurant. So scheduling has been the most difficult. Very rarely have I've gotten it to where I'm like, hey, let's do this time. And they're like, okay, first try. It works out great. Whereas usually it's this day. Well, no, this doesn't happen. Or this does, you know, little things like that. So scheduling has been the most difficult. And I've been really bad about, and this is one of the things that I've been working on for 2021 to grow and improve the show, is reaching out to potential guests. You know, for a while there, I would upload an episode and I'm like, okay, time to go find another guest, instead of kind of having them lined up and scheduled ahead of time. And so those have been the two things. Just to improve upon those, I just have been trying to reach out to more people regardless, and then kind of have a more set schedule for releases, because I do love podcasting. I really didn't think I'd enjoy it as much as I do, but I really enjoy what I've started. So I definitely keep it going. Mike Cunningham, who I mentioned earlier, when we got done talking, he told me that most podcasts don't make it a year. So he's like, a lot of people start these kind of as a passion project, and then life gets in the way. They get busy. They realize that it's kind of, it is a time commitment to really grow something. And he's like, so if you can just be consistent, you'll make it. Like, you'll do better than most people. And I do want to make this a continued thing. I don't want, you know, you know, football starts for, you know, it might start back up for us next month. I don't want, like, well, I'm busy now. I'm going to take a break. I did take a little bit of break. And so, at the beginning of the year, just to kind of get my thoughts in line, but I definitely want to keep this going. And so, I guess the big thing is just finding more guests, more people that want to sit down and talk to me, and then lining up schedules. It's going to be more difficult for me with sports starting back up. And like I told you yesterday, I just got approved as the strength and conditioning coach at the high school I coach at. So that's another scheduling thing that I'm going to have to work around. But I look forward to that challenge. You know, if you care about something, you make time for it, whether it's a hobby, a passion project, friends, family. And I do love doing this. And so I definitely look forward to the challenge of making time for it. And I just think that'll make me appreciate it more as well.
Absolutely. Having that consistent schedule is really tough, because sometimes you're in the mood to do two or three episodes a week. And other times you're so busy, you feel like you can only get in one in a month. And it's really hard just to be consistent over time with a, you know, semi-reliable schedule. especially when your hours are just different than most of the guests that you have on. So it is just an added layer of complexity and difficulty, and everyone's schedules these days are so different with working normal hours or working weekends or working nights or, you know, having kids or not having kids. Definitely a challenge with the podcast. And I agree, if you can, most podcasts probably don't make it a year. And if you can make it through that first year of figuring out, okay, what's realistic for me? Is twice a week realistic? Is twice a month realistic? Is the way I'm scheduling guests, is this productive for me and for them? Or am I scrambling every time? And this is actually causing more issues for me and where I'm trying to go. But no, with the podcast, it is nice to also give yourself an opportunity to either do as much as you want, and you can always come back to it. So if you take 2 months off, like, it's still there. You can still get more guests and keep it going. So it's kind of like a book that's never finished. Like, it's always going to be there, and you can do as much or little with it as you want. But like you said, if you really want to grow, you have to be consistent with your schedules, and you have to have quality guests, and you got to be a quality host too. So there's a lot of complexities to the podcast, but it sounds like it's been overall pretty good success for you so far.
It's been a lot. I don't want to say it's been a lot bigger than I thought. Like, I'm not trying to make it out to sound like this huge success, but when I started, I really, you know, I thought to myself, nobody's going to listen to this. Nobody knows who I am for the most part. Nobody cares who I am, you know? So I really didn't think I would get more than like a dozen listens, you know, and it started out, it really helped me, for any future, if there's anybody listening that wants to start their own podcast, a little tidbit of advice. It really helped that I got a really big name guest for like towards really early. You know, my second guest was Ryan Banta, who is just incredible, girls track coach in Missouri. He has a very big following. He's a very well-known clinician in track and field, and an author. And then shortly after that, I had Tony Holler on, and Tony is obviously a very big name in our field. And so that just spiked my listenership, and which Tony's episode is what made me find your podcast. I think it was like a year or so ago. Whenever it was, I saw him tweet out that, or somebody retweet or something, and so I was like, oh, you know, I'm a big fan of Tony's. I'm gonna give this a listen, and then I really enjoyed the episode, and then I just, you know, I've been a continued subscriber. So, I knew like getting somebody like that early on would help. And then the cool thing about podcasts is that, you know, there's analytics behind every episode. You can see how many listens each one has. And it's kind of, I don't want to say it's been a steady decline, but, it's been I've been able to figure out my average audience. Once I take out the outlier, like Tony or Ryan, and, it's a lot, you know, I'm not Joe Rogan. But when I look and I see, oh, this episode has a couple hundred listens, or, you know, like Tony has, like my episode with Tony has over 1,000 listens. And that might not sound like a lot to some, but for a guy who didn't think he'd get more than 10, that's a huge deal. And every time I get after an episode, I'll get a DM to somebody like, hey, I really enjoyed this episode. You know, like, you reached out. Brad Dixon, who's a coach I look up to a lot, reached out to me and said, you know, hey, I really enjoy the podcast. Keep it up. And that just, you know, reaffirmed that, okay, this is something I want to, you know, it helped me want to keep doing it. And because it just confirmed that I was putting value out there for other people. Because if people don't find value in what we're doing, it makes it hard to want to do it, right? Regardless of the number of listens, in my opinion, you know, if 5 guys listen, but 5 guys get something out of it, well, that's time well spent, right? But I don't, I'm getting off track. But
no, this is all important. This is all things I was going to say. So you took the words out of my mouth, and I agree.
I'm not used to be on the other side.
No, that's fine. No, when I'm a guest on a podcast, I'm just like, how does this work? Like, do I talk more now, or do I have, can I ask you questions too? So no, that all works, but it really helps when people that you like and respect and look up to and trust, and you want to be a role model to, they reach out to you. Hey, I got a lot of value from this. Hey, that was an awesome podcast. Hey, that guest was really cool, and I'm going to start following them, or I'm going to buy their course or go to their clinic. When you can help other people that you want to help, whether you look up to them or they look up to you, that just makes all the difference in the world. And it's worth all the time, energy, and effort that you put into it to make a difference for other people. That if you just sat at home every day and never did it, you might not have that influence. You might not have met a new role model. You might not have a new follower who looks up to you and has a similar career path because you inspired them. So as much work as like hosting and editing and producing and finding guests is for the podcast, it just seems like the risk, not a risk reward, but just like the benefit of doing it is so much in your favor. It's just do the best that you can and see where it goes.
Absolutely. And it is time consuming. You know, it's a lot more time consuming than I thought it was going to be, honestly, especially editing, just listening through it. And when you're somebody that kind of mumbles and rambles like I do, it makes it that much more difficult. I found that the less I talk in my episodes, the less editing I have to do. So that's been something I've been very conscious about. But initially I remember thinking about, because I don't have any sponsors, and I don't think I ever will, right? I'm not trying to make it big. I'm not trying to monetize this. What I do, I just want to put value out. And I know that might sound cheesy, but it's true. I'm just doing this because I want other people to get value out of my conversations with coaches. I think that's important. And I want to put value out there because I get a lot of value from the same top, you know, the same thing, listening to people talk to other coaches. But the way that I've kind of looked at it, you know, like I've missed work shifts to have an interview. And so it's like, it's costing me money, which sounds kind of crazy. But the way I justify it in my head is I'm getting an hour uninterrupted time with another coach that I look up to. Usually you got to pay for that on a webinar or something like that. And right. So it's like, yeah, it might cost me a little bit upfront in the short term, but in the long term, you can't put a price on a connection, right? On a relationship with some form of networking. So it's time consuming, and you know, it was hard to justify at the beginning, like buying a microphone and all these things. But no, absolutely worth it. You know, I could never make a cent off my podcast, and I doubt I ever will, to be honest with you. And I'm completely okay with that because the value I get out of my conversations is just priceless.
It's very similar to coaching, where you put in so much effort and energy on the front end, like learning how to coach, maybe shadowing, maybe interning, maybe not getting paid what you think you should get paid. The hours don't match up to the money or the time, or into like the time that you're giving away to other things. But you give it 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you start building connections, you start building community, start building a following, you start helping out a lot of people. And then, you know, 20 years down the road, you're in a position you never thought you'd be because you did all that groundwork to start. And the best ones understand this is a long-term play, whether it's podcasting or coaching, that it's not so much, what am I getting out of this today? But what can I get out of it in 20 years? And what can I give for the next 20 years to help other people with what I'm passionate about?
So that's well said. Coaching is a thankless job. And like, you know, like all those things you said are absolutely true. And I think having done that for years kind of set me up for maybe an understanding of the world of podcasting, right? Of it's not financially, there's not great return for the amount of time you put in, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to get something out of it. Obviously, I think most coaches, especially at the high school level, feel underpaid. And at the collegiate level, I guess I shouldn't even say at the high school level, most coaches feel like they're underpaid for the amount of time they put in. I don't know of any coaches that outside of the private sector that are paid by the hour. So it's really tough to kind of feel like you're getting adequate compensation for the amount of time behind the scenes, not even the time you spend at practice and at competition, but just the amount of time behind the scenes that you put in. But when a kid PRs or you win a big game or whatever the success might be, or even small successes, like a kid, you know, that does a successful snatch for the first time in the weight room and you helped have a part of that, whatever it is, it's internally very rewarding. And it's the same sense of podcast. Every time I check my analytics, I'm like, oh, this episode has X amount of listens, or a coach messaged me and said he loved this episode. I feel incredible. I feel like, you know, $1 million, I'm on cloud nine. So it's very easy to feel like the time's well spent well.
What first got you interested in coaching? Did you play sports growing up? Did you have a coach that you looked up to? Did it just kind of fall in your lap?
Yeah, I was a three-sport athlete growing up. I had a less than ideal home life, we'll put it that way. And so sports was an easy way for me to get out of the house. It was a way for me to stay busy. So I loved, you know, I wasn't huge into sports when I was a little kid. Like, my family's not overly into sports, but all my friends were. So sports was a way for me to get out of the house. And so I wrestled and ran track and played football. And I came my senior year, I guess, is where it first hit. I got injured wrestling my senior year. And so when track came around, I couldn't throw very often because my shoulder was so messed up. So I spent a lot of time just hanging out at practice, coaching up the other throwers, and it was a really great experience because it kind of set me up to understand where I'm at now. We have, in my high school, the boys and girls coaching staff are split. So there's a head boys, a head girls, and they each get one assistant. And that's how it is here in Macomb. I'm the head boys coach and I get one assistant for all events. And so I could see firsthand what it's like to be, you know, spread thin as a staff. So I told our throws coach, who also coached high jump and kind of helped with distance and did a little bit of everything, that I would help coach the throwers. And I was like, you know, hey, just tell me what you want them to do and I'll watch them. And so that was kind of my first experience into coaching. And then a friend of mine who went out for track as a senior who hadn't thrown, came out since middle school, ended up, I want to say I can't remember if he won, but he got top three in conference and shot. And I just remember like feeling like I had a part in that. It was amazing. And after that, I was hooked. And so I went to Western and I was a PE major. Because I knew I wanted to coach and I knew teaching was the easiest route to get into coaching. I walked up to one of my professors and I asked him, how do I go about this? And I really wanted to coach wrestling first. I just felt like wrestling was the sport I was best at. I wasn't a standout in any sport. I was very much average in all three. And so, but I thought wrestling was the one I was best at. So I figured, well, that's the one I should coach. And they emailed the AD and he emailed the AD for me in early December. And the AD got back to me at the end of February. And he's like, well, regionals are next week, so we're really not looking to take on a coach. He's like, and when he told me that, I was like, well, they're probably going to start track soon. So I guess maybe I can coach track. And so that's how that started. I became a volunteer assistant throws coach. They already had a throws coach. So I became kind of his assistant. The next year I got paid as the junior high assistant coach. I was in charge of the throws. And so I coached throws for junior high and high school. And then the next year at 20, we needed a new high school head boys coach. And so I applied and the AD took a chance on me. And that's where I've been ever since. And that time I've also been coaching football in some capacity, whether at the junior high level, JV or varsity level. And like I said earlier, now I'm also the strength coach. So now I've got three coaching hats I get to wear. I very much didn't, kind of like you said with career path, when I was younger, I thought I was going to be in the military and then I wanted to be a general. I really wanted to get into construction and, you know, throughout high school, I changed career paths in my mind like five or six times. Sure. And then there was just a moment in track practice senior year and I was like, this is definitely it. You know, I love sports, but I'll be honest with you. I never cared about like being the best athlete, but for me, it was more about the social relationships and things like that really kept me out for sports. Obviously I wanted to be good at it, but coaching was like the first thing where I was like, I really care about this. Like I want to be really good at this. And so I knew that was my calling and it's been tough. Not to go on too much, but it's been really, coaching outside of teaching has been a lot more difficult than I think a lot of people realize, especially in a public school setting. And I've had to change jobs a lot to fit coaching. You know, like I said, right now I work in a restaurant and it sucks. Hour wise, it's really tough. But the reason I'm there is because I make my own schedule. I'm in a management position, so I make my own schedule so I can align it perfectly with sports. It works great. Before that I worked at a hog farm. And so I would get up at 3 a.m. and go to this hog farm. So I'd be off in time to go to practice every day. And I would do that Monday through Friday. And I did that for 8-9 months and it was exhausting and I hated it, but it allowed me to keep coaching. And so going through all those, I guess, hardships, not to try to sound over dramatic, but they're definitely challenging, has also just kind of reaffirmed that I'm on the right path, right? If I can make this work through all those less than ideal circumstances, then I know that this is what I meant to do. So,
absolutely. And it makes it more rewarding when things start rolling in your favor more. It's like, wow, I'm really glad I did all that hard work, and I'm more appreciative of these future opportunities that are coming my way because I sacrificed so much in my early years. So with coaching, whether it's football, track, strength, conditioning, what drives you to really help kids like get to the next level? So it's really easy for a lot of coaches just to kind of like maintain, but what gives you that purpose and drive to help these kids really excel from where they are now to where they want to be?
A lot of it is internal for me, in the sense that I want to be the best possible coach I can be. And not that coaches go out of their way to be bad coaches, but I think some coaches just get very complacent. And at a very young age, I've tried very hard to make sure I don't fall into that mindset. And in order for me to be the best coach I can be, obviously a lot of learning needs to take place, but at a certain point, in order to people to think I'm a good coach, I need to have some form of success, right? You know, like, I think I'm a pretty good offensive line coach. Our football team went 0-9 last year. So it's really tough for me to argue that I'm a really good football coach when like the scoreboard doesn't reflect that. And so I know that in order to validate some of these feelings, I need to have success, right? I can't put all this time into being the best track coach I can be if I never have a kid that, like, if I don't have a kid on the team that can like break a 7-minute mile or run sub 13 in the 100, right? And not to say that those are the most important things in coaching, they're not. But if I want to be all in on this, I need to be all in on trying to attain success as well, because that is an aspect of this job. So in order to do that, I need to continually try to find ways to make athletes the best athletes they can be. Like, if I'm trying to be the best coach I can be, I also need to try to find ways to make athletes the best athletes they can be. And that's been a huge rabbit hole that, you know, that's led to things like Feed the Cats and all these other things, which I'm sure we'll touch on. But I also remember my time as an athlete. So there's the side of like, I want to make kids the best they can be because it helped, like, it also validates me putting in the time to be the best coach I can be, if that makes sense. And that might not be the best answer. Like, oh, I want kids to be the best they can be so I look good. But I also think that it's important to want to have success as a coach, right? Like, I want to be a successful track coach. I don't want to be average. I don't want to be complacent. I want to be the best track coach I can be. And I want success to follow that. And I don't think it's wrong to want to be successful, right? To be ambitious. Now, I'm not going to cut corners and sacrifice kids' health, safety, emotional, or, you know, anything like that, for that goal. But I do think that that's an important thing to realize. But I also think back to where I was an athlete. And I think being a coach, I'm kind of hypercritical of my coaches now. Sort of like, if you become a doctor, I'm sure you think back on all your doctor visits and think about all the times that they, like, I don't like agree with how they, you know, how my doctor treated me then or something like that. And I had incredible coaches. I played for two football coaches. They're in the IHSA Hall of Fame. I competed for a track coach who's won state championships and is absolutely amazing at his job. But I remember thinking that my coaches really didn't put a lot of time and effort into me as an athlete or as a person. My coaches genuinely made me depressed. One of our football coaches, like, he brought up, like, I'm kind of a heavier set guy. He would like bring up my weight all the time and would like talk about how like horrible like I was because I was fat and overweight. And I just like remember like being depressed about it. And I just remember thinking back now, like, my coaches cared about the program being really good, but they didn't care a lot about us as individuals. And so I think that that's something I've really tried to change in my own coaching, is the best way to have, like, with track, right? The best way to have team success is to have individual. It's, you know, it's an individual sport, but it's a team sport. So, like, taking the time to like look at each athlete, as an individual person, and not just like lumping them in as part of this big unit, has really helped me in that area, you know, talking about like what makes me want, you know, to help kids get to the next level. It's also, you know, it's so I can be a better coach and have success as a coach and validate me, but it's also so they can feel better about themselves, right? Like if I think a lot of kids need their coach, or even maybe not even a coach, but a teacher or somebody like that, to just invest time in them as people. And because I remember, I know how it feels when thinking my coaches didn't like care about me as a person. And so I don't want a kid on my track team to feel like that. And I know starting out, I wasn't really good at that. And I just cared about race results, right? But by starting to to focus on individuals, I found that the results that I want have followed, right? You know, I spent more time with kids one-on-one. We didn't have a season last year, but the year before that, and we won conference for the first time. Now I had a lot of talent to work with, and that helps, but like I also just, kids were more excited to compete for me as their coach, because I decided to invest more time in them as people. If that makes, you know, if that makes sense, if that helps answer that question. I just want kids to feel good about themselves, not only as athletes, as people. And then maybe selfishly, when I see that happening, it makes me feel better about myself, right? And so I just kind of feed off the results I get from the team aspect, from the results I give from getting kids individually the best they can be.
Does that make sense? Absolutely. What has been the most challenging aspect of over the last year with COVID in reaching those goals and trying to get athletes better and trying to make yourself the best coach possible? What has been the most challenging aspect of it, and what has been the most rewarding?
The most challenging aspect has easily just been contact with kids. We were told for a while there that, you know, no contact period with kids. You can't message them, especially like when this first started, like no contact between coaches and athletes. And so that was incredibly difficult. It was really difficult at the beginning. I was part of that crowd, admittedly very wrong, that thought, oh, this isn't going to last very long. Like, you know, this was back in March. Since we left the drive home from the state track meet the year before, I had talked to at least half the track team every week about all of our goals for 2020. And we were all in, and it was going to be kind of like our coming out party of the program. And we had a very, very talented junior class, a very deep senior class, some very critical sophomores. And we were going to be that we were going to be extremely competitive, repeat as conference champions, and just really kind of put Macomb boys track out there on the scene, you know, and get our program out there for people to kind of put on notice, you know, like, hey, this is our coming out year. And then it meet started getting canceled. We had one indoor meet, and then our second indoor meet got canceled, and kids were getting really discouraged. And then school shut down, and it was like, there were still, I guess, you know, conversations of, you know, oh, it's going to be a couple weeks or a month. The government just needs to get a hold on things. And then that just kept getting pushed back. And then the school year was over, sports were canceled. And it was really tough for those freshmen, sophomores, and juniors who had really built into this year because of the senior class that they had to look up to, and to know that that was gone, and that we had spent the last year building up for something that just got taken away. And it was really deflating for me as a coach. And it was at times, admittedly, I wasn't the best at keeping a positive appearance. Especially when the season was, you know, it's like, well, crap, this was our year. And then I remember thinking to myself, why was this our year? Like, why can't that level of success be my goal and my objective the following year, even if I don't have, say, as much talent? And then it made me think, okay, was I just dependent on talent, right? Like, was I just like, oh, I'm going to have a lot of really talented kids this year, so this year we're going to be good? Or am I going to buy into what I've been trying to tell myself, that no, you're a really good track coach, you can coach kids into being successful, which is what I'm supposed to do, right? And so it was really discouraging for me to lose that season and to lose that group of kids. But then the most positive part of it was, okay, now I have time to kind of double down and, you know, really buy, like, go all in on learning and growing as a coach. I have all this time. I have until at the minimum fall for football, which, and then I got pushback. Like, Illinois was one of the states that didn't have football. So I've had a very long stretch of just learning, growing, and networking. And I had a conversation on one of my shows where, do I wish I had a track season? Of course, everybody does. Like, I'm not trying to say that not having a season was a good thing, but the most positive thing was out of it was I am much more equipped now to have success moving forward, I think, than if I was. And because something, and this that I think back that might have happened was, okay, if all these kids compete, like, perform as well as we thought they would, right? Like, on paper, like, oh, this kid is going to high jump this high this year, and he's going to score at this state meet, and the 4x4 is going to run this, and all these things. And let's say we do have the success that we were hoping. Well, then that's probably what, in the short term, would have stunted my growth and might have just led to complacency, where the opposite has happened, where I'm all in on learning as much as I possibly can and trying to have that same confidence going into next season, right? Like, I lost a lot. My program did, you know, kids moved away, kids graduated, but I'm still, my sense of my goals, I should say, haven't changed for the 2021 track season as they were for the 2020, just because I lost on paper the talent that I had. I'm excited because I think I'm better equipped to coach kids up to that level of talent that I thought I was going to have, if that makes sense. So, to stop my rumblings, the hardest part was talking to kids and keeping them positive, because it was hard for me to stay positive. I was very deflated.
For sure.
But the best part of it was, I think I did a good job of capitalizing on the time I had available. And now moving forward, I'm going to be 10 times the coach I would have been, I believe, if we had had a season.
Is there anything specifically you are really looking forward to implementing with your track team that you have learned over this kind of 12-month hiatus from sports?
Yeah, we had so Feed the Cats is, you know, what a lot of coaches are going towards. And, you know, that's kind of like, I don't want to say the hot new topic, but I had dabbled into Feed the Cats 2 years ago, and it was successful. And then last year in our indoor season, which is for us, it's just running in the hallways, we did a Feed the Cats approach. And we only got to do it for about a month before the season was over, but we saw some really positive things out of it. And so going outside this year and being able to have a full season, hopefully, I should say, I know nothing's guaranteed anymore, but I believe it is trending towards us having a track season. Being able to implement that full time, I'm really excited about. And because I know kids were really buying into it. And it also just made things easier for me as a coach. Honestly, one of the kind of topics of conversation that's been showing up on my Twitter feed lately is like max velocity versus like tempo work, and is tempo work good, bad, and all these things. And but I do know that like training max velocity more often makes it easier for me as a coach. For example, Tuesdays was a max velocity, we timed sprints on Tuesdays last year. The whole team, like distance throwers, jumpers, sprinters, the whole team would work max velocity together, because when I have one assistant, it's really hard for me to coach a lot of things at once, right? I can obviously only be in one place at a time. And especially when we're outside, things aren't set up. Like the shot and disc ring are really far away from the high jump and pole vault. Everything's kind of spread out. So it's kind of tough for me to coach a lot of things at once. But with Feed the Cats, I can kind of separate it from like speed, power, and distance. But even on days that, and I'm not saying you couldn't do this without a Feed the Cats approach, but Feed the Cats kind of helped me make those connections. When like once a week, I make my distance runners sprint with the sprinters, right? Like the whole team does. And so me and my assistant can sit there and time kids and coach kids up, and I can see the entire team for a practice and build those connections with kids that maybe I don't get to interact with as much as I would prefer, just because of logistically, I can't help everybody all the time. So reaffirming Feed the Cats this summer was a big thing for me, and just, you know, having a chance to try it full time and really see how far I go with that. And, you know, it does help that a lot of the connections I made have been in the Feed the Cats community. That's not that I don't, I guess, I don't want to, I don't know how much you want to go into actual training, but I do have, I've also seen the, I also do believe in the value of submaximal running to some degree. And I do think that there is a place for it if done properly. But one of the things that just sells me off Feed the Cats is, okay, I guess kind of repeat what I said, was it's just logistically, it's a lot easier for me to coach. And when I was trying to write programming for the weight room, there's a strength coach named Cody Hughes, who's a high school strength coach. And he has an ebook called, Complete Design of Strength Training Program or something like that for high school. It's a really good resource. And one of the things he talked about was when exercise selection is pick the things that you can coach, right? And I can't, with just one assistant, it's really hard for me to go super unique with my training for a lot of kids and to individualize it, especially as my program's grown to 50 plus kids. So with Feed the Cats, it just makes it a lot easier. If most of my, and is that the most optimal way? You could argue no, right? Of course, the most optimal way is every kid has a program specifically tailored to their needs, but that's just not feasible for me at the high school level with one assistant. Right? And maybe it is for some, better coaches that are more organized than I am. But for me, it's just not when you're also trying to work in field events, right? And I also help coach the girl throwers. So there's that aspect too. But Feed the Cats is just logistically, it's just so much easier for me. I can have a lot of the kids doing the same thing at the same time and get a lot more kids on similar schedules, right? So everybody's trading max velocity today, or everybody's trading acceleration. And then those lower days, then we can split it up into a low intensity technique work and things like that. And it just makes it easier. And then I can spend more time with those field event guys. And it just has, it worked out. The short preview I got of it, it looked like it was going to work out really well. So I'm really excited to put that in full time.
I think the biggest thing with any philosophy is just figuring out as a coach, how do I implement this the best way into my system? It's not that you have to throw your system away or completely replace it. It's how do I take what I value in this new philosophy or this new idea or this new paradigm or even a new exercise, and how does it work for me in my situation? I've talked to so many different coaches about this, where you just got to figure out what's best for you and your athletes. And it might be a time constraint, might be a location restraint, might be a lot of different, it could be a financial restraint. You just got to figure out, hey, I know all this knowledge now. How do I implement it best? Not only for my athletes, but for you as a coach. When you have only one assistant in certain situations, you can't spend 25 minutes with one athlete talking through why they need to, change their hip position or change their throwing mechanic when it's a shot putter or a discus thrower. So I definitely agree with you. I think you're doing a really good job of, taking in a lot of information and then just figuring out the best way to implement it, kind of like one step at a time, one brick at a time, one layer at a time, so your kids can buy into your system even more.
Yeah. One thing that I found out about myself pretty early on in my coaching career is I'm very impressionable, and I have a tendency to, at least early on, I would hear a new philosophy and I'm like, oh, I like that, so I'm going to throw everything out from what I was doing. And obviously that's not the best way to approach things. And what I've done over this COVID time is expose myself to as many different ideas as I can in some regards. And so I've better equipped myself to be able to process what I'm hearing and to throw it out and keep what I like and implement. And, for example, not to go off tangent, but have you ever heard of Bondarchuk, the Bondarchuk chain system? Anatoly Bondarchuk, he was a Soviet thrust coach.
I'm not familiar with it at all.
It's very it's pretty complicated. He wrote Transfer Training, basically, which is talks about how there's specific things that specific benchmarks in the weight room that transfer over to the competition, right? So shot putters need to be able to, if you can underhand shot put of this weight this far, it translates to this many meters, things like that. Derek Eveley is an incredible track coach from Canada who's now based in Chicago. He had a course on it, And I learned about it through Tyler Rathke, who we both know, who we both had on our show. He had a Zoom call and somebody mentioned it, and he talked about how Derek had this course. So I looked into it and it was really interesting. And then basically the gist of it is you do the same workout for a very long time, and you find out that you do the same workout every day, every week, or every single week. And you find out when kids peak, right? How many training sessions does it take for an athlete to peak? Because it's unique per athlete, right? So it might take this kid 30, 50, whatever. And then from there, you can count back from competition for this specific athlete. And then I heard that and I was like, this is amazing. I can't wait to do this. And then Nick Garcia, who's an incredible, one of the best high school throws coaches in the country. I heard him after I finished this course that I spent hundreds of dollars on and hours learning. He was like, yeah, if you work with high schoolers and I do any other sport, you can't use this. So don't try it. And I was like, wow. So this incredible new system that I learned about that I was so excited to use, I just found out I can't use because all of my throwers are multi-sport athletes. And I thought, well, this is really discouraging. So I'm going to ignore that. However, rationale is, well, maybe someday I'm going to have a kid that only throws, right? Which isn't common, especially where I'm at, but maybe. Now I have something that I can use for this kid, right? And there was a tweet that just really infuriated me. I saw a long time ago. I can't wait to play or compete against these coaches that are going listening to all these Zoom calls and webinars over break because they're going to have all these ideas and not know how to implement it. And that just grinds my gears because while you might not be able to implement everything you learn, that doesn't mean you shouldn't learn it, right? And I just think that as coaches, we should try to have the biggest toolbox we can. You know, I work construction. And I work for a guy that had thousands of tools and I maybe used five of them. Right? Like I still mainly just use a drill and a hammer and a tape measure. However, he had a tool for every situation. And as a coach, I want to have a tool for every situation. And if we always talk about how no two athletes are the same, then I think we need to have the opportunity to implement a system specifically for a kid right now. We can find things like for me, it's Feed the Cats, where 99% of those kids fall in that, like, you know, they need to work, they need to get faster, they need short bursts of max velocity with long recovery, and that's going to help them improve the most as athletes. However, that there might be a kid, while that's not the case. And so, while I'm not going to individualize every kid's program, I have the chance to make individual critiques to every kid and little changes that I can make on a personal level. And going into it with, my team is going to use Feed the Cats. All right. But I see Jimmy maybe needs more sub max work. I can see that through trial and error. Right. So like when my whole team does like that first week, when my whole team on Tuesday, like runs a fly 30 or fly 10 or whatever it is, I can see every kid and then I can make those changes for that kid moving forward. Right. But if I try to do that at the start, I would just get overwhelmed. And I think a lot of details would get missed. So through COVID in this time, I now have a lot of tools in my toolbox, but I still plan on just using a couple, right? Like I still plan on not just using Feed the Cats, but starting out primarily as Feed the Cats. But then through all this time, I've been able to add weapons to my arsenal where I can then go to like an individual approach. On an athlete per athlete need. Does that make sense?
Yes, that absolutely does. I think those are all good signs of good coach. I think you have all the good signs of a good podcast host. And it's really exciting to see people out there in the sports community really striving to be their best, both for other coaches' sakes, for athletes' sakes, for parents' sakes. And it just makes everyone in this community a little bit better, a little bit stronger, a little bit more motivated to be their best self. Before we sign off on the show, just let our listeners know where they can find you, like your Twitter, and talk about your podcast, where they can find that as well.
Yeah, if you go to my Twitter, it's at Coach McGachy, and I'm going to spell that because nobody knows how to spell my name, but it's McGachy. If you put a vowel in there, you spelled it wrong. So it's at Coach McGachy. And then if you go to my Twitter, there's a link tree. There's a link for my link tree that has my podcast, which is on every major podcast distributor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbeam, all those. So that's the best thing. Twitter is the best way to get a hold of me. DM me. My DMs are open. You could also email me at coachmcgachy@outlook.com. But that's, if you go to my Twitter, you'll find me, and then you'll also find a link to my podcast.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It's been an awesome talking to you about, you know, a fellow podcast host, a fellow coach, Talking about Feed the Cats is always a passion of mine. So thank you for all your insights, your stories, your struggles, your successes. And I really hope for you and for all your coaches and athletes, we have a spring season, we have a summer season, and fall football comes back. So best of luck to you, your team, your program, your athletes. And thanks again for being a guest on the Bold Base Performance Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for all you guys put out. I love all your content. So thank you so much for what you guys do.